I'm DeWitt Bingham. Welcome to the Justice for All podcast show, where we discuss all things social and criminal justice related, from the front end to the back end, and everything in between. You have a right to remain silent, because anything you say can and will be held against you. You have a right to an attorney. If you cannot afford one, one will be appointed for you. You're in the self-incrimination protection zone, where there is no cruel and unusual punishment, no illegal search and seizure. The exclusionary rule has you covered. So sit back, relax, and become sold on this week's episode.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Justice for All podcast show. I'm DeWitt Bingham, your host. Thank you for tuning in to the show that discusses all things social justice and criminal justice, where the goals are to inform you, the American citizen, of your constitutional rights, to provide educational occupational guidance to high school and college students, and to be a voice for change. We are in the third week of classes already at Heartland Community College. There is a lot happening in the world of criminal justice. As I mentioned last week, an emphasis for the semester will be discretion. So each topic that we cover, we will discuss the discretionary aspects of it. This week, students had their first exam over chapters 1 and 2, the basics of criminal justice system and measuring crime. So today we're going to be discussing chapter 2. Measuring crime, how crimes are disposed of, and how discretion is associated with it. So without any further ado, I introduce to some and present to others, Ms. Haley Hendricks. Welcome to the show, Haley.
Hello.
All right. The title of today's show is disposing of crime. So let's jump right in. Haley, segment 1 is for the educational and occupational guidance of high school and college students. We accomplished this by having our guests introduce themselves. So if you would, tell the audience where you were born and raised, what high school you attended, your major or planned major, why you enrolled in the course, and give us one career goal.
Sure. So I was born and raised in Normal, Illinois. Been here my whole life. I graduated from high school at Normal Community West, just down the street from Heartland.
Wildcat!
My major is criminal justice. I just changed it a few weeks ago, right before the semester started. And then I enrolled in this class because it was my first elective for the major, just kind of dipping my toes in, seeing what it's like. And then a career goal is to get into the U of I Law School, because I do want to pursue like being a lawyer.
Wonderful, Haley. That is awesome. Do you have any particular type of idea of what type of law you might want to practice?
I've been leaning a lot towards family law. That's the one I'm leaning towards right now. Not set in stone, though.
Okay, wonderful. That's awesome. Haley, you being only the second podcast of the semester, I want to ask you, how has it been navigating this course? I mean, have you been able to find the homework? You guys had a test on Tuesday. Did you take your test?
Yes.
You did? Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Wonderful. Okay. And so in terms of cover page of the course, getting to the modules of the course and et cetera, how has that been? Has that been okay?
Yeah, that's been good. The class has been easy. I had a little bit of trouble getting the textbook, but I got it now. So hopefully everything's good. It's been easy so far. Hopefully it stays that way.
Wonderful. All right. Very good. Moving on. We have a Normal West Wildcat with us today, ladies and gentlemen. Segment 2, constitutional rights. Segment 2 is to inform the American public of their constitutional rights. Before we ask you to tell us what your favorite constitutional right is and why, let's remind the audience that today's episode is entitled Disposing of Crime. When we talk about disposing of crime, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the methods or ways in which a crime can be resolved or dealt with, if you will. So according to Fagan, the author of our text, the text or the textbook that Haley actually mentioned that she just received, and by the way, she did wonderful on her exam and homework, which means that she actually did some internet searching as well. And so according to Fagan, the author of our text, what are two important criminal justice data sources, Haley?
Two of the important data sources is the Uniform Crime Report, because it gives an understanding of crime rates and trends along with the National Crime Victimization Survey.
Wonderful. There are three main ones, but I'm glad you mentioned those two, because those two are significantly different from one another. When we think about the Uniform Crime Report and when we think about NIBRIS, the National Incident-Based Reporting System, those are two data sources that are accumulated, or the data from those two data sources is derived from law enforcement. Those are crimes. Now I'm giving away the answer to my next question that I'm going to ask Haley. But those are data that is accumulated as a result of crimes reported to the police. But she also mentioned the National Crime Victimization Survey, which is another data source that we actually accumulate that I'm going to talk about here in just a sec. What's the difference between, or can you give me one difference between the Uniform Crime Report and the National Incident-Based Reporting System?
Sure. So the Uniform Crime Report is pretty much a summary of data and specific criminal offenses, while the National Incident-Based Reporting System is more in depth about the offense, like the offender and the victim.
Wonderful. Haley mentioned the in-depthness of the victim and the offender. And so one of the things that NIBRIS does is it collects information like educational background, employment background, and factors that can be driving forces to individuals that violate the law. Factors that the Uniform Crime Report itself does not actually delve into and or collect. So when it comes to disposing of crime, Haley, how does discretion come into play?
Well, I think it can come into play in a bunch of different ways, but one of the main ways is creating laws, how they're going to go into effect, what's it going to benefit, and then also another way discretion is used is in court, what they should be charged with, or if they should be given a plea deal, or something else based on their previous history. And one more is like a police stop. So if they should just be given a ticket, a warning, or if they should be arrested for whatever.
Wonderful. Ladies and gentlemen, I did not prep her on this. This is something that she has researched and read and studied on her own. Wonderful, Haley. You are awesome. We have a very knowledgeable young lady here, ladies and gentlemen. Who would you say has the most discretion when it comes to disposing of crime? You mentioned the police. You mentioned in court, which involves a defense attorney, which involves a prosecutor, which involves a judge. But who would you say, in your belief, has the most discretion?
I said government roles. So people like senators, governors, representatives, even the president, because they have the most power to change things and help reduce crime rates. They can make new laws or edit those laws. So I think they probably have the most power overall.
Oh, wonderful. That is a different aspect or view I was actually thinking. But when you think about it, senators, representatives, Congress individuals, the law doesn't become a law unless you have a legislator to actually pass the law. Is that where you were coming from?
Yes,
or is that where you're coming from? All right. Before I asked Haley what her favorite constitutional right is, ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to know that, again, the Uniform Crime Report and NIBRIS are crimes reported and collected by the police. These crimes are eventually reported to the FBI and gives us a view into the types of crimes committed, when those crimes are committed, where those crimes are committed, who committed the crimes, and it allows for us to compare states, cities, and neighborhoods. But what happens if crime is not reported to the police, crime is reported but not recorded, or if reported but it isn't viewed as important enough to investigate? Well, Haley mentioned National Crime Victimization Survey. This survey is where crimes are reported to the United States Census Bureau under the Department of Commerce twice per year. Research has shown that these surveys sent out to thousands of homes has had a return rate as high as 84%, which means a lot of people have reported crime that was not reported or recorded by the police. That's why we call these crimes the dark figures of crime. The survey focuses on the following crimes: assault, burglary, larceny, motor vehicle, theft, rape, and robbery. What's the most obvious crime that the National Crime Victimization Survey does not solicit, Haley?
Most serious would be murder.
Absolutely wonderful. All right. Tell us, what is your favorite constitutional right?
So I picked the Sixth Amendment because it has to do with a lot with like the right to a lawyer and an impartial jury. And I want to go into law. So I think it's very important that somebody has somebody else to represent them. And then that impartial jury is really important. So it's completely unbiased and it's completely fair. It's not tipping the scales one way or another. So I think that's probably my favorite if I had to choose.
Wonderful. You already are knowledgeable. You ready for law school, lady? Come on now. The Sixth Amendment. Everybody has a right to an attorney. If they cannot afford one, one will be provided to them. Jury selection is very important, is it not? You're going to be a part of that someday as an aspiring attorney. Is there any particular knowledge that you want to share with the audience about jury? Just something that you actually think about occasionally?
Oh, it's very hard because each side of the court case gets, I think it's two or three where they can kick somebody off the jury, even if the other side likes it. So the very hard process to get like a fair, unbiased jury. So,
all right. Last question in this segment. Is anyone above the law?
No, definitely not.
Even if I participated in an insurrection, I should not be above the law?
Nobody's above the law. So, yep, you're not above the law. Sorry.
Wonderful. All right. Very good. Segment three, being a voice for change. As an emerging adult who grew up in a predominantly white America, what say Haley about white supremacy and Black Lives Matter?
I'm not exactly sure what to say. Definitely white supremacy is an unfortunate thing. It shouldn't like be happening. And then Black Lives Matter, totally 100%. Not much else to it. Like everybody's the same. Everybody's equal. Nobody's more important than another just because of their race. So, you know, I think movements for Black Lives Matter is really important, like getting that like equality. So, yeah.
And so do you believe that movements like that can have an impact on the criminal justice system? If we,
yes.
Okay, you care to expound?
I think if enough people are like peacefully protesting about it, like voicing for change, if enough people care about it and voice their opinions, something will eventually happen. Somebody will come across and be like, oh, hey, other people think this is important. A big majority think this is important, and hopefully say something.
Wonderful, Haley. Okay, I asked everybody that appears on the show, and I'm going to be saying this semester that this is going to change should someone replace President Biden as president. But what would you like to see the Biden administration accomplish? If there was one thing that you would like to see the Biden administration accomplish, what would that be? If they would say, Haley, what is it that you want to see changed? We're going to change it today, or we're going to implement whatever it is that you would like to see changed. What would that be?
So I actually had two written down, if that's all right.
Yes.
My first one is to keep increasing the minimum wage, which I think is just a state thing, but regardless, keep increasing that. And then another one is addressing the current abortion issues in the country.
Oh, watch out, audience. We got an astute student today. Did you know that there are some states that still have a minimum wage of like $7 and something an hour? And we know that based on NIBRS, the factors that NIBRS has collected when crime is reported, we know that lack of employment and good stable income and being able to take care of yourself financially is a driving force to people violating the law. And so you would think that Congress and people would understand that the more people make, the better off they will be, the less likely they will violate the law. Were you going to say something, Haley?
No, just agreeing with you.
All right. Should a convicted felon be allowed to be president of the United States?
So when I was reading through this earlier, I kind of had mixed thoughts. So I'm going to say yes and no.
Okay.
So I said yes, but no, because some people learn and grow and become better people. And some are convicted felons very young. So like if they like are in jail or prison and like learn and get like rehabbed and like are a better person than they were, then sure. But then I also took it from the no perspective, because if you do something to get yourself marked as a felon, like murder, then that may not be great in terms of looks for the country, having like a murderer or something like that as a president. So I kind of took it from the like yes and no standpoint, depending on each individual situation.
Wonderful. Because the way our society is now, the American system is now, is that if you are a felon, you can't vote. We could possibly have a president who can't even vote for himself. You follow me? Does that make sense? Okay. And so having said that, should a convicted felon be allowed to vote?
Of course. Okay. I think, like, again, going back to, like, everybody's equal. Like, if they got out and are, like, doing better, like, of course they're allowed to vote. Their voice matters. Like, they're still a person after all.
And would you agree that our vote can impact policing, corrections, and the courts?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
All right. What's your thoughts on marijuana has been legalized in the state of Illinois? Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on legalization at the federal level?
Personally, I say it's not needed. I just don't see like what good it could come from and like what it could do in the country. And my mom works for the state, and she works a lot with like marijuana and like overdoses and like information. So I've learned a lot from her. And I just don't think like the risk is not equal to reward. So that's where I stand on that.
Wonderful. Let's end with this, Haley. Okay. Free community college. Do you think that community college should be free?
I do. I'm at community college. You know, I think education is important, even if it is just 2 years at a community college. I think anything past a high school diploma is always important. And if everybody can get that, that's awesome.
Wonderful. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, how crimes can be disposed of, discretion in relation to disposing of criminal behavior, important constitutional rights, and how to make America a better place to live. Until next time, keep living your best life. God bless and Godspeed.